to another episode of Young Black and Bald Sports Desk. I am your boy Q, and we're working a little shorthanded today. Our gracious co-host Greg came down with the case of the COVID. So he is currently recovering. So just for those of you who were looking to listen to Young Black and Bald tomorrow, we will not have a show. I know Loudmouth Stereo is probably going to be on pause as well. And actually usually on Wednesdays until he feels a little better. We did talk to him today. He is having a little bit of symptoms, but we're definitely wishing a speedy recovery for him. I definitely wanted to speedy recovery because he has a wedding to attend, which he may not be able to now. His sister's getting married. But in any case, Greg, feel better. I hope you ordered that similar tea that we told you to get yesterday, that we texted you in the group chat. Hopefully that is doing some wonders for you, helping you to get better. I am joined by our co-host tonight. Go ahead and say who you are.
What's going on, everybody? It's Lou. Hope everybody had a good week, had a good Mother's Day. Let's get into it.
Pam is currently being a mom right now, and getting her baby together to put her down for bed. So she will be on in a second. Hello, Cashly. Thanks for joining and listening tonight. And let's go ahead and get the show on the road. First of all, how was everyone's Mother's Day, everyone's past week? I think I've already said my Mother's Day thing, how I don't celebrate, because I haven't really celebrated Mother's Day since my mother passed away 10 years ago. And tomorrow, actually, May 10th, would have been her 57th birthday. So all of those feelings and everything that I felt yesterday, Sunday for Mother's Day, I get to repeat them all over again tomorrow. But hopefully I'm going to try to make it enjoyable. I'm going to try to cook a special meal, something that she would have loved to have if she was here with us. Because, you know, although she's not here physically, she still is here. She still is here with me and my brother and my sister in spirit. So I'm going to try not to be. I know my sister wasn't sad. I am the one, I guess, for me being the oldest, it hit me the hardest. And it has the last 10 years hit me. You know, it's been been a wild ride. I would just say that. But we're going to try to make it enjoyable. Tomorrow in DC is going to be, I think, 75 or 76 degrees. So it'd be fun to sit out on the balcony and just, you know, remember the good times. But how was everyone else's Mother's Day?
Kind of uneventful. Just hung out at home and, you know, I did the daily chores. So the kids helped a little bit too. So she got to relax a little bit. My wife did. So. Yeah, you know, all in all, it wasn't bad. It was all right.
Well, that's good. That's good to hear. That's good to hear. I don't know if Pam's still with tending to her baby, but hopefully she had an enjoyable Mother's Day as well. And with that being said, we'll wait until she comes back on wrapping the segment. So let's talk a little football. For the time being,
all right.
We had a few stories come out this week. Not much from the NFL side, but it is put up or shut up time for Jalen Hurts. So it is put up or shut up time for Jalen Hurts. So, you know, the Eagles during the draft, they traded for for AJ Brown to improve the wide receiver room in Philly, because all they had was last year was Devontae Smith and a bunch of scrubs. So the brass in Philadelphia is hoping that that trade helps Jalen Hurts develop more as a pocket passer. We all know his dual threat ability with running the football. But they're trying to improve him as a pocket passer, because last year he only had, I think, 14 passing touchdowns over 16 games. And they're trying to figure out, because after this season, he is extension eligible. And we know how much quarterback salaries have exploded in the past couple of years. And Philly needs to know if they found a quarterback of the future, their franchise quarterback, or if they need to dip into the 2023 pool and get one of the heralded quarterbacks that's coming out in 2023, including C.J. Stroud and Bryce Young from Alabama. So, Lou, your thoughts?
Well, I mean, like you said, he's going to have to come out and ball out. I mean, you know, do they have their guy? Or, like you said, are they going to have to draft another one? So he's got a lot to prove. And they gave him another good weapon in A.J. Brown. They got a good running game, I believe. You know, Miles Sanders. And, I can't remember who the backup is.
Last year it was Jordan Howard.
Okay, yeah, that's right, Jordan Howard. But, I mean, you know, if the running game stays good and, you know, like you said, dual threat, everything like that, then, you know, he should be set to improve a lot this year.
Well, definitely open zone. I mean, they cashed in their first-round pick to get A.J. Brown and then gave him $100 million. So they need to make sure that before they invest $150 million in Jalen Hurts, because, you know, that's the going quarterback rate at this point, they need to know that we can actually get him and Devontae Smith the ball.
Right.
No, and Dallas Goedert. Don't forget about him either. I mean, this is a big, this is a huge year. It's time, Jalen Hurts needs to put up or ship out.
Right. Exactly.
So that's that on Philly. In other quarterback news, we know Baker Mayfield is still in Cleveland. It don't look like he's going anywhere. No time soon. At least not until sometime in June, or when a big quarterback, or when a team really gets desperate and says, hey, we need to get a quarterback. But he did say over the last week that he would have welcomed a trade to Carolina. And the reason why he said he would have welcomed that trade, because he simply just for the simple chance to just play.
Right.
So, your thoughts on Baker?
Didn't he come out a couple weeks ago? The Panthers wide receiver, Robbie Anderson, I believe it was. When they asked him about, you know, what does he think about Baker, if, you know, if they traded for him, and he straight up was like, no, please, no. So,
wow.
I mean, they drafted, who did they get in the draft? Corral?
Yes, they did draft Matt Corral. There's also more Baker news and why, some comments that he made that indicated how Cleveland poisoned the well. He said that when Odell Beckham Jr. was released, that pretty much put the kibosh on any relationship that he had with the team, fellow players. There were comments made, when Odell's dad released that tape
I forgot about that.
A Browns player said, "Have you seen it?" He was like, "No, why do I need to see the tape? I see it every day in practice."
I'll tell you the one thing. As a lot of people know, you know, I'm a Steelers fan, okay? So, and I live an hour west of Cleveland. Cleveland did him wrong. They really did Baker wrong.
They did. And Baker was healthy. You got to remember, he had a torn labrum. He played in a torn labrum since week two of the 2021 season. So he wasn't healthy. Right.
He wasn't healthy. But, you know, from what Baker says anyway, I mean, you know, who knows if you could trust him or not. But, you know, the front office told him, you know, it's your job. We trust in you. We believe in you. You know, it's yours to lose, blah, blah, blah. And then, boom, they go out and get Deshaun Watson and just give him everything. So, you know, I kind of feel bad for him, but he'll catch on somewhere. He'll definitely catch on somewhere.
I mean, it's really shocking because you have a team in Seattle that doesn't have an answer to quarterback since they,
right.
Ever since they traded Russell Wilson. I think, and like I said, it may have been because this quarterback class was such garbage. Here's the thing. Baker is owed $18.9 million this season if he's not released. What team is trading for him?
Nobody.
And what sense does Seattle have to trade for him when they can roll out Drew Lock, who's only owed, I think, $2.6 or $2.7 million? Tank this year. Absolutely tank. Like maybe they'll win four games. I mean, you have receivers like Tyler Lockett and DJ Metcalf. They're going to give you a chance. But why not lose? Get a high pick in the draft next year. And thank you to this motorcycle asshole. but why not just punt the season, this upcoming season? Lose as many games as you can, and then to have a chance at one of the. I told you who the headliners for the 2023 class: CJ Stroud, Bryce Young.
Mm-hmm. Why not? Well, maybe that's Pete Carroll's. Maybe that's his plan right now.
Well, it certainly looks like Pete Carroll has said that. We don't anticipate trading for anybody.
Right.
We are just going to ride this one out, pretty much.
And then he did say, you know, we're open to, like, listen to, you know, whatever offers or ideas or whatnot. But, I mean, you know, you can't believe him.
Right. Absolutely. So, it's really interesting. And like I said, who is trading for Baker Mayfield when – all they have to do is wait. Because Cleveland is probably going to cut him.
I think they have to cut him by a certain. They have to cut him by a certain date, or they have to pay him that money, right? Or is that money guaranteed regardless?
It's guaranteed. The fifth year option is fully guaranteed. That's the point of getting a quarterback in the first round. You can have that
right. Well, that's what I'm saying. If they went out and got Deshaun Watson. They went out and signed Jacoby Brissett. So, I mean, you know.
They didn't just go get Deshaun Watson. They paid him a pretty penny. And they gave up half of their draft in the next 6 years.
Yes, they did. Because they're in win now mode. So, and again, we don't even know if Deshaun's going to play all 60 games. He might get suspended, or he should get suspended for at least the first, you know, 6 to 8 games.
Well, I look at
in
terms of the suspension, I don't think it's going below six. I think.
Oh, no. I don't either.
I think Goodell is going to pull an MLB and suspend him for the entire season.
Oh, really?
I just have that feeling. I mean, now you
maybe
have, you have precedent now with Trevor mm-hmm. Bauer. Even though two different sports, but you have precedent over that now. Like Trevor Bauer wasn't criminally charged. wasn't criminally charged
yet.
But not only did baseball basically pretty much suspend him all of last season, just about all of last season, except for like the first month.
Right.
That's now a 3-year suspension for Trevor Bauer. Mm-hmm. So the NFL, like I said, there is some precedence now in suspending him for an entire season. I don't want to be race into it. I don't want to be race into it, but it's also a racial factor too. And I hate to be a bearer of bad news, but I think that's probably what's going to happen. It's going to be no less than six. It's going to be no less than six, because that's what Ben got. That's what Ben Roethlisberger got, 15 years
right,
ago.
Right.
He got a 6-game suspension, which eventually was knocked down to 4 or 3.
Oh, wow.
So, like I say, I don't think it's nothing lower than six. He probably misses half the season. My bet and my call is he misses the entire season. It was a reason why Cleveland, when they tore up his old contract and gave him that new one, they signed him for $1 million.
Right.
Because suspension money is only taken out of your base pay. They don't touch the bonuses.
Well, and that's the other thing too. That's probably another reason why they're not cutting Baker Mayfield yet either. They're probably hold on to him until they find out what the suspension that Deshaun Watson's going to get too. So,
but here's the thing: like, you know, that suspension is not going to come down until the last weekend of the preseason. So week 3 of the preseason. That's when they announce the suspension. Like, it'll let you think, oh, he's good to go for the season, and then Goodell is going to bring that hammer right before the season starts. So they're kind of in. Yeah, one. Baker has no leverage. Cleveland has no leverage. Cleveland has no leverage. Because no one's trading for him, especially in the final year of his contract. And why take on $19 million in salary when we can just wait a couple of weeks and sign him for the league minimum?
Mm-hmm.
So that's an interesting story in Cleveland. Yeah, Goodell needs to make a decision. I think that would help Cleveland make a decision. All right, do we need to hold on to Baker right now, or can we cut him loose? And I think the ultimate decision is going to be they're going to cut him loose, because like I said, no one's trading for the contract. And he had 2 years left. Yeah, but again, Baker has no leverage, because it's clear as day that Cleveland doesn't want him anymore, and Cleveland doesn't have any leverage because it's clear to the NFL that Cleveland didn't want him because they traded for Deshaun Watson. So it's a cruelly complicated decision in Cleveland. Good luck to them with no first round picks for the next 4 years. Moving right along. So we briefly brought up the AJ Brown situation being traded to Philly. How we now know why money, that great Harbinger money. He wanted a contract that was worth at least $20 million. The Titans offered $16 million with incentives to get him back, to get him to $20 million. Right move? Wrong move?
How much? How much was it?
So his contract with Philly is 20. It's 4 years, $100 million. That's about two. Average annual value of $25 million a year. He wanted Tennessee to give him 20. Tennessee was saying no, because in 3 years, A.J. Brown's only played a full 16-game season or 17-game season one time with many different injuries throughout those 3 years. Even though he went over 1,000 yards, he was a Pro Bowler. But, you know, he would miss two, three, four games at a time. Right. So they were leery about giving him Devontae Adams money when he can't stay on the field. Well, not even Devontae Adams money. They paid him, who's the guy? Christian Kirk. Tyreek.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know.
Well, it's all up to Philly now. I mean.
They
wanted to give Jalen Hurts at number one, and they don't think that Devontae Smith is at number one, so they want to get a clear number one.
But yeah, Devontae Smith was never going to be a true number one. Like, height wise, and his game is not a number one receiver right now. Could he? Well, we'll see. I mean,
possibly.
I mean, we have a situation here in Washington where Terry McLaurin was not pegged to be a number one, but he's a clear number one. So I'm not saying that it's not possible for Devontae Smith. I just know right now he's not a number one. And that's exactly what, and you know, I hate Philly, but that's exactly what Jalen Hurts needs. He needs a true number one. And yeah, Philly hasn't had a number one receiver since DeSean Jackson was in his prime.
Right.
They thought they had one in Alshon Jeffrey, but Alshon Jeffrey couldn't stay on the field.
I don't know.
It's interesting times in the NFL. Interesting times in the NFL. So, our last little NFL story of the week, what happened today, actually. Torrey Smith, who played with Carson Wentz in Philly, won a ring with him in Philly. He says he went on NFL, on Good Morning NFL, if you want NFL Network, and he laid out a 3-minute case as to why he thinks that Carson Wentz, or as I call him, Carson Heineke, is going to have a breakout year in Washington and resurrect his career as a franchise starting quarterback.
I mean, again, possibly it could happen. Will it happen? I have no clue.
Right.
You have to wait till preseason. See how he looks at preseason. So I honestly, you're the Washington fan. So you know more about the team than I do.
I absolutely don't believe in Carson Wentz. No, I don't. I think that either Taylor Heineke or Sam Howard, one of those two will be the starting quarterback by the end of the season when Carson Wentz quits on his team. Now, he does have a better situation here in Washington, just in terms of offense, with Antonio Gibson, Terry McLaurin, the Jahan Dotson, with the rookie from Penn State. And if Logan Thomas and Curtis Samuel can get healthy and stay on the field for 17 games this season, I think he has a better supporting cast in his hand, both in Philly and in Indianapolis. But I just don't think he gets it done. Prove me wrong. I would love to be proved wrong. But I don't. I just don't. You know, and I got to see Carson Wentz twice a year when he played in Philly.
Right.
I just don't see it. I don't see it. The only year I saw it was the year the Eagles won the Super Bowl and he couldn't play in the Super Bowl. He couldn't play in the playoffs when he tore his ACL.
Right.
I don't know.
Well, and here's the other thing you got to think of, too. And I don't know. Like I said, you know the team better than I do. How's their offensive line?
Well, the offensive line lost a big, big piece of Brandon Sheriff. But we all knew Brandon Sheriff was leaving anyway.
Okay.
They did go and sign a guard that played under Ron Rivera. I don't remember his name right now. The offensive line is returning four starters. Well, three starters. Because Eric Flowers left for free agency as well. We go to Jacksonville. but the line was actually one of the team's strengths. It's just that was one of the team's strengths last year. It's just that Taylor Heineke kept running in the sacks.
Gotcha.
Taylor Heineke kept running in the sacks. half the sacks that he took were his fault. And Taylor Heineke didn't have the arm strength that have not even an iota of the arm strength that Carson Wentz has. So that's why I think, that's why I want to believe Torrey Smith. I was a huge Torrey Smith fan when he went to when he started the University of Maryland. So I'm heavy, I'm big on Torrey Smith, and I think he would know because he played with him. You know, he played with him. Right. I just don't see it happening. And if it happens, great. We may have found out. We may have finally found our franchise quarterback. But I'm not banking on it.
I got you. Like I said, it's a wait and see. Wait and see.
Definitely a wait and see right now. But from what I've heard so far about Jahan Dotson, like he was supposed to graduate. Actually, he graduated from Penn State Saturday. He was going to skip graduation to be at practice. And Ron Rivera said, fuck no, take your ass and run across the stage. So that tells you the work ethic. That tells you the work ethic about it. I think from what I've been hearing and the post-draft analysis about Jahan Dotson, I hope and pray to God that we hit our own run to take some of that pressure off of T-Mac. But again, we will have to wait and see. We will have to wait and see.
Right.
And now that we have finished with our NFL and Pam has returned, from putting her baby down, we're going to move right into our wrestling update. Pam, it's all yours.
Thank you so much. This weekend was wrestling. It was a lot going on. We had Impact Under Siege. Mia Yim came back, and she actually returned there, looking to challenge Deonna Purrazzo. That was a shocker for this weekend. We also had WWE's Backlash, which is going to be the main point of topic for me this session, well, more so this segment, just because, to be honest, it didn't make any sense. I don't understand why we're calling it WrestleMania Backlash instead of just Backlash, but, you know, Vince likes what he likes, and, you know, it kind of is what it is. So we'll just break down what happened at Backlash. So it was Cody Rhodes versus Seth Rollins, and of course, Cody beat Seth. Believe it or not, that was the best match of the night. And it was the first match of the night, which really shocked me. Next, we had Omos versus Bobby Lashley. And Omos, of course, beat Bobby Lashley because why would you put him to be this unstoppable force to then get beat by Bobby Lashley? Considering Bobby Lashley just beat him at WrestleMania and there's not really much going on for Bobby Lashley anyway. Then we had Edge versus AJ Styles, where Edge defeated AJ Styles by referee's decision. AJ Styles, essentially, what that means is he was out cold. He couldn't even tap out. He was just done. And then we saw Rhea Ripley go and debut with Edge and Damian Priest. So, like we all kind of predicted, it more so fits her style. So I'm looking to see where that goes as far as their stable. Ronda Rousey versus Charlotte Flair in a I Quit match. And Ronda Rousey defeated Charlotte Flair, made her say I quit, and she is now the new SmackDown Women's Champion. Madcap Moss versus Happy Corbin, and Madcap Moss defeats Happy Corbin. I just feel like that would make sense in a storyline, but still, I don't get it. Like, I like when it was Sad Corbin and his arc to go to Happy Corbin, but now it's just kind of all over the place. And last but not least, we had the Bloodline versus Drew McIntyre and RK-Bro, both champions, everyone champion, actually, except for Drew McIntyre, which I really don't want him to win. I'm over the Drew McIntyre reign. It was boring, great during pandemic, great when fans came back, but I'm kind of over it. Move on. And of course, We The Ones, day one, on God mode, Roman Reigns, The Usos, The Bloodline defeated Drew McIntyre and RK-Bro. Overall, whole pay-per-view, honestly, like a 4 out of 10. I honestly, yeah. And out of that 4, 3 of it goes to just Cody and Seth because it was not that good. I really struggled to pay attention and to watch and stay into this pay-per-view. So do not recommend at all. But I do have two voice memos from my beautiful co-host, Ms. Cashley, where we discuss more in detail on Mel and Matt. So I'm going to play them.
I think it was a WrestleMania redo. Like, if there were some matches that you really didn't like, here's your chance to get a redo. That Charlotte and Ronda match still didn't do much for me this time around either. I think they're just lacking a lot of chemistry. You know, it just wasn't no synergy. It didn't flow right, in my opinion. So I could have done without that Mania redo match.
I agree.
The tag teams kind of carried that main event. Like the Usos and RK-Bro, I think they really carried it. They work really well together in the ring and put on really great matches. I think Roman and Drew were just kind of like compliments. Like, let's just throw them in there. And I think they really heard the backlash of them trying to unify the tag team titles. So it just wasn't going to go over well.
I also agree. I don't see the point in reunifying the titles. I mean, you already have the main titles unified and Roman has to be on both shows. But then to unify the tag titles as well, the women's tag titles are already unified. I think if anything, that should not be unified. Let there be a Raw women's tag and a SmackDown women's tag. You know, more titles, yes, but that also gives more people on a roster a chance to be seen instead of having the same people on the same shows. You have a big enough roster, Vince. You can definitely split these titles up. They don't have to be unified. Like, for Roman's sake, for the sake of that storyline, yes, it made sense. But now going forward, what was the point of bringing the Universal Championship then if you're going to just unify the titles? So I definitely agree. The unification of titles just didn't make sense. This whole thing didn't make sense. And then what happened to the Sasha Banks, Naomi versus Shayna and Natty match? I guess that got cut. This pay-per-view was not good. Not good at all. It felt more to me like a SmackDown pay-per-view than anything. Even though they had Raw people on it, it felt more SmackDown-y vibes to it. And normally SmackDown is better. So in terms of how good it was like a Raw episode, but it felt like, as far as colors and dynamic, it felt very SmackDown-esque. So, Vince, do better. Definitely give it a 4 out of 10, with 3 of those points going to Cody and Seth. And yeah, that is my week in wrestling. It wasn't really much that went on this week besides that. AEW has a lot going on, still trying to figure out what's going on with the Owen Cup, but I'm excited to see where that goes. And Jade Cargill, of course, is the best. And she is still that bitch. So on to you, Q. Take it away.
All right. Thank you for that update this week. Again, you can always catch the Mind on the Mat here at Orange Stereo. Help me out with the days. And we got to change the days. Or not. But yes,
I'm not sure.
I want to say Thursdays.
Yes.
Thank you, Lou, for paying attention and listening. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Anyway, you can find the Mel and Matt here on Thursdays live on Stereo on Thursdays, and I believe the time is 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Help me out with that time.
Good job, Kim.
There we go. Well, thank you for that update. We're going to move on from here and talk a whole bunch of NFL. I hope not. We just talked to NFL. NBA, because the playoffs are underway. I have been very pleasantly surprised and very, very happy with all of the playoffs so far.
We've only had once in the entire process. Well, that was Brooklyn. But mm-hmm. the series have been very tightly played. We have two series that are tied into Phoenix and Dallas and Philly and Miami. We have one game that's playing right now that may have reached its end fight with like 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Milwaukee and Boston. Really, if you have that game now, can you just give a quick update on that?
I don't have it on, but I can give you an update right now. There is 7 minutes left. 7 minutes left in the fourth quarter, and Boston is up by 190-89.
Wow!
Against Milwaukee. So
wow. How is Tatum? What is Tatum right now?
I can tell you that also. Give me 1 second. Tatum has 18 points, 4 assists, 13 rebounds.
Okay. He
showed up more this game than the last one. I know that.
So you said it's what, 9 minutes left in the fourth?
Six and a half minutes.
Okay. Ooh, that's going to go down to the wire again. And we have coming up after that game, we have Memphis and Golden State. Memphis and Golden State going into game four. Game four will not have Ja Morant in it because of the injury he suffered in game three. That's what I want to talk about right now. So we have Jordan Poole. He's in a situation. I didn't watch the game, but just watching the meeting ahead, the highlights and everything, He appeared to grab Ja Morant's knee, and I think that's how he landed that knee injury. So no flagrant or no other league discipline was brought about by the NBA on Jordan Poole. And yet we had in game two, we had Dylan Brooks get a flagrant two and a one-game suspension for a play that caused Gary Payton II to fracture his elbow.
Mm-hmm.
And we all know about game one, where Draymond Green got a flagrant two for catching, was it Jerry Jackson or was it Brandon Clark?
No, it was Brandon Clark.
Caught him in midair, and that got him a flagrant two with no suspension.
Right.
What's up with the officiating with these playoffs? Because there was complaints about Milwaukee-Boston game three. We know how tight and how physical this Golden State-Memphis series has been, which I still have Memphis winning. Don't let me down, John Mulaney. Come on back, game five. we had an incident. Well, it's not really an officiating problem, but we had an incident yesterday on Sunday in game four of the Phoenix-Dallas series where fans put their hands on Chris Paul's mother and wife and other members of his family. What the hell is going on?
That's just fans being really, really stupid, that is. I mean, they know before they even come in there that they're not supposed to do stuff like that. I don't care if they're someone's, you know, if it's one of the players' family or not. You don't put your hands on anybody. And especially if you're a man, you don't put your hands on a woman, period.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they showed They showed a little video earlier on TV about that. And it looked like the person they were escorting out, it looked like a kid. I mean, he looked like he was 16, 17 years old.
Yeah, I saw that.
So,
but Chris Paul was understandably upset. Hey, I'll see you later.
Oh, of course.
See you later. And he had every right to be. That's his mother.
Exactly.
His mother and his wife and his two children. His kids had to see that in the screen. Is that too? Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not mad at what Chris Paul tweeted. I'm not mad at his reaction. I'm not mad at him for being mad. to being angry. He had every right to be.
I would be too.
Players, fans need to remember that players are human too. And the players have their families in the stands. And the same respect that we want the same respect that the NBA expects players to give to fans, fans need to reciprocate that to the players and to their families. Heckle, tease all you want. The minute you put your hands on somebody, whether it's a player's family, or you just be outright disrespectful, the player should go. Player should be able to knock someone the fuck out.
Well, the Phoenix Suns coach.
Man, Chris Paul did that. He suspended the rest of the playoffs and to next year. But like that double standard, it's crazy.
Well, and I mean, you know, you saw the tweet that Chris Paul put out earlier today too, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Okay, yeah. I mean, he said, you know, players can't say anything to the fans, but, you know, the fans can put their hands on, you know, someone's family and stuff like that. F that. Mm-hmm. So I 100% agree with them too. But the head coach of the Phoenix Suns, I'm drawing a blank on his name.
Monty Williams.
Monty Williams, thank you.
Who won coach of the year.
Yes. He brought up a good point in a press conference today that said, like, the families, you know, mothers, families, whatever, they should have special seats. Like, put their families in the club suites or something. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That way, you know, they're there, they can see everything, and, you know, maybe some of them want to be closer to the action and everything, but, you know, put them in the club seats. You know, you eat free food, beverages, everything, you can see everything. So I thought that was a pretty good idea, what they should do.
I think it's a great idea too. I think it's a great idea too. But I think doing that, I mean, yes, of course, you want to ensure their safety, first and foremost.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you also have to remember their fans too. They want to experience the action. So I think it's a push and pull with that. But I do agree that even if a section of the arena, like on the lower bowl or close to the players' bench, is reserved specifically for players' families, and you buffer off that section to other fans, like, you know, maybe like the first, you know, 5 or 10 rows,
right?
The first
right.
5 or 10 rows are reserved for players' families near their team's benches. And you restrict fans in that sense. But I know, you know, just from someone who plays sports, you know, for me, was running track. You know, my mom wanted to cheer on her baby, right? My mom wanted to cheer on her baby. So, you know, that's why I say it's a push forward. You know, you definitely should ensure the safety of players' families, but those families want to experience, because they're fans too. They want to experience that. They want to experience the action. It's just, it's unfortunate that you have certain little assholes that mess it up, you know, and mess that experience up. And then on Mother's Day, come on now.
Well, yeah, right, right. And I saw something else that came out that said the people, the whoever did this said that they were offering hugs.
Don't touch my folks. No.
Right.
No. Yeah, I saw right. that too. I saw that too. They wanted to,
like get the hell out of here.
You can wave, you can say hello, you know, you can ask for a picture, and they say no, keep moving. No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. So those fans were banned from American Airlines Center until 2023. Do you think they should have been banned longer or banned for life?
Yes. I do. I mean, you go to any sporting event, That's any sporting event. One of the first things they tell you is, you know, don't touch the players. You know, I mean, yeah, it might not say anything about the players' families.
Don't run out onto the playing surface. Don't run out onto the court. Don't run out onto the field. Don't run out onto the diamond. Don't enter the playing surface. You know,
I mean,
but don't.
They have a brain. Use it. Yeah, that's all I can say about it. You know what I mean?
I'm not agreeing with the band of the 2023. They should be banned for life. They should never have the opportunity, and not just at American Airlines Center, not just in Dallas. They should never be allowed to go inside any NBA arena for the rest of their lives. Anywhere an NBA game is being played, they should not be allowed to be in attendance for the rest of their lives. So I don't agree with them only being banned from games from the building until 2023. What if they just go to somewhere else? Go to Phoenix or go to wherever Chris Paul, you know, is playing. No, they should not be allowed to be in the building ever again in any NBA arena ever again. That's just blatant disrespect.
I hear you.
That's just blatant disrespect. So I wanted to. I wanted to play a game, and I was hoping that Greg would be there. But I want to play a game. I want to play buy or sell. And what we're buying or selling tonight, and we're going to make, and we're going to keep this quick. We're buying or selling. We're buying or selling. Excuse me. It was one more NFL story I wanted to talk about. We'll circle back around to that in a second, but I want to buy and sell the breakout stars of this current playoffs. Now, a couple of the names that I'm going to say, their teams have already bowed out, but their play when they were in the playoffs makes them a breakout star. So the first one I want to start with, the first one, DeAndre Hunter. During the regular season, he averaged 13.4 points per game, 3.3 rebounds, 1.3 assists, 0.7 steals. With shooting splits of 44.2 on twos, 37.9 on threes, and 76.5% at the free throw line. His playoff stats in the however long that Miami Atlanta series was. These were his stats. 21.2 points, 3.8 rebounds, 0.6 assists, 0.8 steals, with shooting splits of 55.7% from two, 46.2% from three, and 80% from the free throw line. So here's the argument for DeAndre Hunter being a playoff star. The only player on this list who failed to make it out of the first round, Hunter's performance against the Miami Heat still deserves some recognition.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
With Miami hounding Trae Young on every possession, which resulted in an average of 15.4 points and 31.9% shooting for the series. Jesus Christ. Atlanta desperately needed someone else to step up offensively, a challenge that only Hunter answered. Having averaged just 10.8 points in his first postseason of one a year ago, Hunter more than doubled his scoring average this time around, hitting jump shots and spot-up threes with regularity. After connecting on 38.2% of his catch and shoot threes during the regular season, Hunter drilled 47.6% of his assisted attempts against the Heat. He also ranked in the 93.8th percentile in isolation scoring this postseason, registering 1.27 points per possession and 58.3% shooting. This is a terrific sign for an Atlanta team in need of star power around Young. Hunter has shown flashes during his three seasons, but injuries have always seemed to derail any type of momentum he's begun to accumulate. While he's not a playmaker by any means, the 24-year-old has the tools to develop into a high-level 3-and-D wing. While it was a small sample size, Hunter looked good when healthy against one of the league's toughest defenses, including a 35-point, 11-rebound performance in Game 5. The number four overall pick in 2019. Injuries are the only thing holding Hunter back. So, by itself, DeAndre Hunter is becoming a playoff breakout.
Now, are we just buying or selling just the playoffs, or are you talking like going into the next season?
Just the playoffs, and I guess we can add going in the next season too. But let's make the main argument just the playoff performance.
Well, then I'll buy that because he was the star for Atlanta because Trae Young sucked in that series. Trae Young didn't hardly do anything that series. So, yeah, I will buy that.
Okay. I'm buying it, too. And I think he can extend it to next season if and only if he can stay healthy, which he has not proven able to do in the 3 years he's been in the league.
Right. Okay.
Next player, Brandon Clark, the Memphis Grizzlies. During the regular season, he averaged 10.4 points per game, 5.3 rebounds, 1.3 assists, 1.1 blocks, and shooting splits of 64.4% from the field, 22.7% from three, and 65.4% from the free throw line. In the playoffs so far, he is averaging 15.1 points, 8.4 rebounds, 2.3 assists, 1.1 blocks, shooting splits of 69.7% from the field. Not a single 3-point made the playoffs, and 67.4% of the line. So here's his argument. Brandon Clark has been a good big man off the bench for the past 3 years in Memphis, and now he has shined on his increased minutes this postseason. If a six-man award was given out during the playoffs, Clark would be the front runner right now. Among players who have come off the bench five times or more this postseason, the 25-year-old ranks first in rebounds per game, second in scoring, sixth in blocks, and eighth in assists, making his impact across a variety of areas. His true shooting percentage of 71.2 ranks fourth among all postseason players, starters, and reserves. As a role man, Clark is generating 1.43 points per possession on 80% shooting. Better numbers than players like Joel Embiid, and we're going to get to him in a second. Bam Adebayo, Rudy Gobert, and even teammate Jaren Jackson Jr. He does a terrific job of staying within John Morant's line of sight, timing his cuts to the basket, which often results in an emphatic slam. While his numbers have jumped, it seems to be more of an increase of a result of increased playing time, as Memphis has gone smaller and quicker by using Steven Adams in limited minutes. Clark's per 36 numbers are remarkably similar between regular season, which was 19.2 points, 9.9 rebounds, 2.5 assists, and 2 blocks per 36 minutes, and the postseason, where he's averaging on a per 36 minute basis, 18.5 points, 10.3 rebounds, 2.8 assists, and 1.4 blocks. So increased opportunity has assisted his playoff breakout more than anything. Likely too small to be a regular starting center at 6'8", 215 pounds, and not enough of a three-point shooter to be a starting power forward for most teams, Clark is probably in his ideal role as a high-minute six-man, one who pairs well next to Jackson. It's great that he's received more of an opportunity, especially with a larger audience watching, but his breakout has been primarily because of the increase in playing time. So, question, by yourself, Brandon Clark having a breakout playoff?
Um, hmm. I'm going to sell because he, do you know why he gets the minutes that he does? Is because Jaren Jackson is always in foul trouble.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, is he worthy of it? Sure. Yeah. But, you know, yeah, I'm going to have to sell that one.
Okay. I'm selling too. I think he needs to continue.
Right.
Getting more minutes. He has to get more minutes. And then if he continues to get more minutes, like if this repeats next year, then it's a clear buy. But right now it's a sell.
I agree.
Right now it's a sell. All right. Next player. Tyrese Maxey. During the regular season, he averaged 17.5 points per game, 3.2 rebounds, 4.3 assists, 0.7 steals, with shooting splits of 48.5, 42.7 from three, and 86.6% from the free throw line. In the postseason, he's averaging 22.4 points per game, 3.7 rebounds, 4.2 assists, nearly a steal per game, and his splits are 51.4, 41.5, and 92.3% from the free throw line. We all know Maxey became a household star, household name this season, because he played point guard. He was the starting point guard for the Sixers the entire season. He completely had a breakout season during the regular season. And now his scoring has gone up from 58th in regular season scoring to 17th in the playoffs. His emergence as a primary scoring option on some nights has been out of necessity, be it Joel Embiid missing two games with a concussion, an orbital bone fracture, or James Harden starting to show his age now in his 13th straight postseason. Maxey has become the Sixers' second leading scorer behind Embiid, jumping Harden in the offensive food chain in Philly. He's a nightmare to try to slow down in the open floor, with only Giannis Antetokounmpo able to stream more transition possessions this postseason than Maxey. The 21-year-old is shooting 62.5% in transition and ranks in the 87.5% percentile overall. As Harden continues to slow down and Embiid continues to receive the majority of the defensive attention, Maxey will be a critical piece of the Sixers moving forward. He's already moved past the present surprise stage into the "this guy is the real deal" in the field. With this playoff run confirming that Maxey's an elevated game on the biggest stage when his team needs him the most. While it may be too early to say that Maxey is actually better than Harden, he's certainly the more important piece over the next few years. There's nothing about his play that suggests it's unsustainable either. Buy or sell Tyrese Maxey?
Oh, I'm buying. Yeah, he's a legitimate star.
Blow me up,
guys. Or he's going to be. Just think of it. If Philly didn't have Harden, if they didn't have James Harden, Maxey would probably be up there, probably top, I'll put him in top 8
top 10.
Point guards.
Top 10.
Yeah, top 10, okay.
Top 10. He had an incredible breakout season this year. And we saw glimpses of it last year when Ben Simmons decided to start acting like a little girl. But we really saw it this year because Philly had no choice but to play him to make him the starting point guard. So I am, give me all the shares of Tyrese Maxey. Buy them all. Buy. This one is another easy one.
Okay.
And we go down to Dallas and we meet up with Jalen Brunson.
Yep, I knew it.
So his regular season stats. 16.3 points per game, 3.9 rebounds, 4.8 assists, nearly a steal per game at 0.8. His splits were 50.2, 37.3, and 84% of the free throw line. In the postseason, he's up to 24.1 points per game, 4.7 rebounds, so nearly 5 rebounds a game, nearly 4 assists per game, nearly a steal per game, and he's shooting 45.7%, from the field, 33.3% from three, and 87.8% from the free throw line. So here's the case on Jalen Brunson. We all know what this is going to be. Following a stellar regular season, Brunson has now jumped to 13th overall in postseason scoring, even ahead of players like Devin Booker, DeMar DeRozan, Carl Anthony Towns, and others. His breakout began in Dallas, his first three games of the playoffs against the Utah Jazz, when Luka Doncic was sidelined with a calf strain. Brunson stepped into a primary scorer and playmaker role, averaging 32 points, 5.3 rebounds, and 5.3 assists while the Mavs took a 2-1 series lead. In our current NBA universe, where point guards are only getting taller and more athletic, Brunson is a throwback at 6'1", instead relying on his court awareness, dribble hesitation, and ability to finish in and around traffic and finding success. Only Luka and Ja Morant are averaging more drives per game than Brunson's 20.3, with only Luka generating scoring points off drives than Brunson's 13.9. His ability to get into the teeth of the defense, despite not possessing Doncic's size, with Morant's athleticism, is a testament to his overall skill set. While his scoring numbers suggest Brunson has arrived as a number one offensive option, that's probably a little too aggressive of a statement at this point. The Mavs have a net rating of -5.1, and Brunson is on the floor this postseason without Doncic, a number that jumps to +5.5 when the two share the court. We've also seen Brunson's shooting efficiency fall this postseason when asked to play a larger role. We saw that in the we got that picture when I read the splits. It appears Brunson's ideal position is that still that of a complementary scorer and playmaker, rather than one who can carry a team by himself like we've seen from Doncic, Morant, or others. Brunson has elevated himself into a Fred VanVleet-like level, a player who should flirt with all-star status every year but isn't ready to be a true focal point. Either way, he's going to get paid this summer in free agency. Buy or sell Jalen Brunson?
I'm buying. Yeah, he showed up because, number one, he had to when Luka was out in that first series for a few games or whatnot. But yep. He's continuing to ball out even when Luka's back now. So, yeah, I'm definitely buying him. And you're right. He's going to get paid.
And you know why? Not just because of his breakout season, because he is now the marquee free agent on the market.
Yep.
He's the marquee. And not a lot of teams got money to sign him outright. So he's about to get paid. Very, very handsomely.
All Mark Cuban has to do is just get rid of one of those Shark Tank deals he did. Nay, he could pay him. He's got money.
Exactly. And our last player, going to San Francisco, Jordan Poole. During the regular season, he averaged 18.7 points per game, with 3.4 rebounds, 4 assists, 0.8 steals, and his shooting splits were 44.8, 36.4, 92.5 from the free throw line. In the postseason, he's averaging 22.3 points per game, 3.3 rebounds, 5.9 assists, 1 steal, and his splits are 55.1, 44.7, and 87.1. Once upon a time, there was talk of the Warriors pooling, no pun intended, seriously, their young talent together to try and chase another star, a player like Bradley Beal who could help their legendary backcourt make a few more title runs. With the emergence of Poole, no trade is necessary. The 22-year-old has followed a breakout season with an even better start to the playoffs, increasing his scoring output, playmaking numbers, shooting efficiency, while Golden State has gone 5-2 so thus far. Poole has been equally dangerous as a spot-up option this postseason, where he's canning 45% of his catch-and-shoot threes, as he is in initiating for himself, shooting 44.4% on floaters and ranking in the 87.5 percentile as a pick-and-roll ball handler, averaging 1.12 points per possession. His high level of play even allowed the Warriors to bring Stephen Curry, the two-time MVP, a three-time NBA Finals champion, off the bench while he recovered from foot injury. Poole is second to Curry in the Warriors in scoring and is arguably the second best player now on a Golden State roster that also features Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, and Andrew Wiggins. His evolution as both an on- and off-ball threat has helped both Curry and Thompson maintain their previous playing styles while also easing their collective burden as they enter their early to mid-30s. He's the perfect third guard in Golden State, one should be who should be recognized as a bona fide star in this league. Buy or sell Jordan Poole?
Oh, buy, easily. Yeah, he showed up. And this goes like back to the beginning of the NBA season. I said, or I might not have said here, I might have put it in our Discord channel or something. But I thought Jordan Poole was going to get the Sixth Man of the Year award. You know, he was just that good. But in the playoffs, when Curry was out, you know, for the first series, or yeah, I mean, just unbelievable the way he played, man, unbelievable.
And all of those stats are as of May 6th. All the stats are May 6th.
Yeah, so yeah, he, I mean. They can all just build on him, you know, as well, with the exception of DeAndre Hunter, who's not in the playoffs anymore, but yeah, like Poole, Brandon Clark, who was the other one? Oh, Jalen Brunson. Brunson, so yeah, they're just gonna get better and better and better, man.
I agree. I think people laughed at when Jason Kidd got the head coaching job in Dallas, but what better way to learn how to be a point guard than from one of the best point guards in NBA history?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. I mean, when he was in Milwaukee, being transformational effective that on Giannis's game. Even when he was in Brooklyn. And at 1 year, he had Darren Williams. The man can.
Yeah.
Questionable as a coach, there are some questions about his coaching ability. But the man can coach point guards. And I know Giannis is not a point guard, but he has point forward instincts. But the man can coach point guards. I mean, just look at the season that Jalen Brunson has had this season. And also, don't forget Luka.
Well, yeah, that's what I thought you were getting at. Like, you know, yeah, he can coach point guards, but I mean, does Luka really need?
He doesn't need much,
right?
But the extra seasoning that Jason Kidd put into his game makes him even more dangerous. And Dallas and Mark Cuban will be absolute fucktards if they let Brunson go. Hand and glove. And it's been an even better fit ever since they shipped Porzingis out and got Dinwiddie.
Mm-hmm. I was going to bring up Dinwiddie, but he's more or less like the third option.
Mm-hmm.
You know, behind Brunson and Luka. So, but I mean, man, I mean, a lot of people have underestimated Dallas. A lot of people.
I did. I thought they were going to finish over 500, and then Jason Kidd would probably get fired.
Right. We're all a lot of mulligan, though.
Yeah, he got a mulligan this year. Yeah, we'll see next year. All right, that was by yourself. That was by yourself. Now to the top of the discussion for the hour. Actually, the next 5 minutes. MVP was decided today. Well, it was decided weeks ago, but it was announced that Nikola Jokic has won his second straight MVP award. So he's gone back to back the last two seasons as the most valuable player in the NBA. A lot of people are not happy that it was Jokic. And that it was Jokic getting that MVP award and not Joel Embiid.
Mm-hmm.
Your thoughts?
I mean, I would like to see the voting.
I need to see the vote totals.
Yeah. I want to see how close it really was.
My secondary question to that.
Okay.
Is Embiid getting punished because of the process? Because remember, Philly stunk for a long time. That's how they got Embiid. That's how they got Ben Simmons. Is the lead writer punishing Embiid because of the way that Philly acquired him? Because there's an argument. There's an argument being made that, you know, Embiid has been runner-up the last two seasons to Jokic.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people are saying, well, we know why he didn't get the MVP award last year, because he missed, what, 20-something games.
Right.
There's no argument this year.
Well,
no major injury argument where he missed, like, a chunk of time. The only chunk of time that he missed is when he had COVID.
Okay, here's – now, all right, MVP means what? Most valuable player, right?
Yes.
Now, does that mean most valuable player in the league, or does that mean most valuable player to his team? I mean –
you can make an argument for both.
Exactly. You could make an argument for Giannis, too. That's why I want to see the voting. I want to see how close it actually was, because there's really no, I mean, everybody pretty much knew it was going to come down to Joker and Embiid, but it's really like, it's a coin flip in my opinion, either one. I mean, either one. And I'm, you know, I'd be, if Embiid won and Joker lost, I'd be like, yeah, that's cool. Joker won. I'm like, yeah, okay. Yeah, that's cool. So,
okay, so just a quick update. The Boston-Milwaukee game has gone final. That series is now tied at 2. Boston defeated the Milwaukee Bucks 116-108. And Al Horford, 30 points, 8 rebounds, 3 assists. Jason Tatum, 30 points, 13 rebounds, 5 assists. Jaylen Brown, 18. Wow. Al Horford had a turn back the clock night.
He was drinking from the fountain of youth tonight, I guess.
Now, Giannis wasn't that bad. Giannis had 34-18. But they got nothing else. Well, Brooke Lopez gave him 17. Jrue Holiday only gave 16. He shot 5-22.
Ooh. Yeah, that's not a Jrue game.
They missed
Middleton
so much in Milwaukee. Yeah. They miss him so much. Because Chris would have gave him at least 20.
Yeah, I mean, and you have that third legitimate scorer, too. Without having on the floor.
Maybe anytime you're getting 12 points from Wesley Matthews, the fossil that is Wesley Matthews Jr.
Mm-hmm.
And Grayson Allen in this shit. He was 3-7 for 7 points.
You also got to remember, though, Boston was like, they played great defense, too.
And also remember this. They were at a disadvantage too, because Robert Williams did not play.
Oh, that's right. That is true.
Robert Williams did not play. That's why Brook Lopez had 17 tonight. So that game is over. That series is now 2-2. So all but one series is tied. We have game 4 coming up right now with the Grizzlies and the Warriors. That probably is going to go 3-1 Golden State. But don't underestimate Memphis, because actually Memphis during the regular season was 20-5 when Ja
didn't play.
It was 20-5 or 15-5. One of those. I'm maybe a little off on the on the actual winning percentage. But don't sleep on Memphis. And Memphis is a very, very deep team. Memphis is a very, very deep team.
They got a good bench.
I'm really hoping that series goes 2-2 because I put a bold position out last week that Memphis was going to the Western Conference Finals, and I need that to come to fruition. I need that to be not a fact.
We shall see.
Oh man! So yeah, I think that the whole argument about Embiid over Joker over Embiid. I need to see what the voting was. I really need to see
what the voting
was. I need to see how close, like if it was neck and neck, okay. Yeah, but you can make an argument for both. But if it was one lopsided toward Jokic, I am not buying it. Even though Jokic did have to do a whole lot less. Didn't have Michael Porter for 8 games this season. Did not have
Jamal Murray.
Didn't have Jamal Murray the entire season. Anytime you're relying on Bones Highland, who was a nobody, no one knew. And Will Barton, who forgets how to play at times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I just need to see how close it was. I really need to see how close. I really need to see how close it was. All right. Moving right along. Oh, yeah. So going back to the NFL for just a second. And I want to talk about, because Peter King's Football Morning in America.
Oh, okay.
About how there are some general managers in the NFL who are saying that they could see wide receivers becoming valued like running backs. Basically, you don't sign them to a second contract. You get everything you can get out of that rookie contract. You cut them or don't re-sign them, and you can get another one in the draft. This is what Peter King said when he spoke to a general manager and believed the market may begin to correct itself. He saw all these big contracts get doled out to wide receivers like candy, and teams didn't want to pay. They traded them away, and then the receiving team paid them. Tyreek Hill, Davante Adams, A.J. Brown. You could throw in Christian Kirk. He wasn't traded. He was just signed outright. So this is what that general manager said. Quote, I can see the receiver position becoming like running backs. Get as much out of the receiver in his first contract, and then after 4 or 5 years, let him go and draft another one high. There are so many good receivers now, I'm not sure they're all going to get paid going forward. And the reason he makes this general manager makes his argument to Peter King because of this. Davante Adams, 5 years, $140 million. Signed a record-setting deal with the Las Vegas Raiders before Tyreek Hill, at 4 years, $120 million, surpassed him. A.J. Brown, 4 years, $100 million, and Stephon Diggs, 4 years, $96 million, were both paid handsomely this offseason as well. That has led many to wonder whether there's a paradigm shift in how wideouts are viewed at the top end. Perhaps it could be like the quarterback position, where the best pass catchers reset the market almost every year. The GM's comments to Peter King suggest differently. And he suggests differently because of this fact. Adams, Hill, and Brown were all traded before they signed new contracts. And more teams can balk at retaining even elite receivers. That could lead to accompanying the valuing of the position, just like running back. The comparison to how running backs have lost a lot of bargaining power could be slightly off base, though. The fact that Christian McCaffrey, the NFL's highest paid running back, is making slightly more than half of what Hill will earn isn't simply down to supply and demand. It's also a reflection of how the running game has been de-emphasized. So I want to throw this fun fact at you.
Mm-hmm.
These are the leading rushers of the last five Super Bowl winning champ of the Super Bowl of the last five Super Bowl champions. 2017, LeGarrette won. He had 766 yards. He had 766 yards that season. 2018, Sony Michel, 931 yards. 2019, Damian Williams, 498 yards. 2020, Ronald Jones II, 978 yards. And 2021, the Los Angeles Rams, Sony Michel with 845 yards. Having an elite ground game is beneficial, but not a necessity to win a championship. Teams can't be that dismissive with their aerial attack. There's no question the draft is fertile ground for wideouts. The 2019 draft alone has seen six different pass catchers use the Pro Bowl. The hit rate isn't 100%. Maybe you wind up with Jalen Reagor instead of Justin Jefferson. In addition, swinging and missing on a receiver with a high draft pick isn't the same as whiffing on a running back in the middle rounds because of the different premiums the positions command. Unless you're Saquon Barkley. Looking forward, the Green Bay Packers, Kansas City Chiefs, Tennessee Titans will all be test cases for the GM's theory on receivers. So, my question to you, do you see a paradigm shift happening in which the wide receiver position, because we just witnessed a draft where half the board was wide receivers. This was one of the deepest drafts in recent memory for wide receivers. Do you see the wide receiver position becoming devalued the same way as the running back position has become?
No, not at all. I mean, because if the wide receiver position becomes devalued, then wouldn't the quarterback position be devalued also?
I don't think quarterback will ever be devalued.
I don't think so either.
Not the way that the NFL game is set up now. The NFL game is set up for passers to throw for 5,000-6,000 yards a season. Because you got DPI. You can't touch a receiver after 5 yards. If you breathe on them, it's a pass interference penalty. You can't touch a quarterback. You breathe on a quarterback, it's a 15 yard penalty. I don't think the quarterback position will ever be devalued. I think their market is going to continue to be reset every year because all the things that a quarterback has to do on the field, they're like a point guard in basketball. They are the extension of the head coach. That's why teams are sending four first round picks to get that franchise quarterback. Looking at you, Cleveland.
Okay, well then you'll just have, or this just proves to you how important it is to have a good backup running back. You know what I mean? You got your stud starter, and then you get a really, really good backup. Mm-hmm. So, see, like you said, like the last five Super Bowls. I gotta say, Ronald Jones wasn't the starter, I don't think, Super Bowl.
It was Fournette.
He right, because he was in there because Fournette was injured. Sony Michel, even he really wasn't the starter last year.
They had Cam Akers.
Yeah, he got hurt. So
and then it was Henderson.
Yeah, Darrell Henderson. So, you know, as far as devalued, I don't think so. That all goes to like the coaches, like using wide receivers as running backs. You know, aka Debo Samuel, Tyreek right. Hill. You know, stuff Cadero like that.
Patterson.
So. Yeah. So, I mean, are they going to run an end around or, you know, a reverse or something every once in a while? Of course. But, I mean, Debo even came out and said that he didn't want to do that anymore. He's a receiver. He's not a running back. He didn't like doing that. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's my thoughts on it.
Okay. I think teams are going to be leery about that big contract because, you know, the one big contract actually took two big contracts on the team, quarterback and an edge rusher. The edge rusher is getting paid. Edge rushers are getting paid. That's why linebackers are, you're not seeing linebackers get $10, $12, $15 million deals. We just need you to tackle. The edge rusher, getting to the quarterback. The edge rusher is like the quarterback on the field. We all know that safety is, but the edge rusher is the most important. Just like quarterback is the most important player on the team, on the offense, because you can't do nothing without a quarterback. We've seen it clear. We see what's about to happen in Seattle. We saw what happened last year in Carolina. We saw what happened in Detroit. If you don't have a top-flight quarterback, the team is dead in the war.
Right. Right.
But if you don't have a top-flight edge rusher, your team's defense is going to suck.
Pretty much.
Your team's edge rusher is going to suck because you're not getting pressure on the quarterback. Quarterback has all day to throw. You know, cornerbacks can't touch receivers after 5 yards. They're going to get torched. So the two positions that I don't see being divided anytime soon, if ever, at least while the NFL is in this style of play, is quarterback and the edge rusher and the pass rusher. They are going to get the big bucks. Wide receiver is going to be next because the quarterback needs someone to throw the ball to. Do I think teams give wide receivers a second contract? Only if they're truly integral to their team's success. Only if they're truly. And we saw how that, and even that is not even the correct argument now because we know how valuable Devontae Adams was to the Green Bay Packers and to Aaron Rodgers. They traded,
right?
We saw how valuable Tyreek Hill is to the Kansas City Chiefs. They traded. We saw how valuable A.J. Brown was to the Tennessee Titans. He got traded. I don't think they get a second contract. And that's not saying that the position is devalued. Teams just not going to want to spend that money when there are excellent line receivers coming out of the draft that they can pick up and only have to pay them $7 million a season on a new contract. So I don't think it's a devaluation. I just think there's so many good receivers coming into the league. There's so many good receivers coming into the league, and the offenses are being tailored. Well, you can tailor an offense around a receiver. You can tailor that offense around it. You know, it ain't just one, you know, two wide receiver sets, everyone playing out of the I formation. You got three, four, you got three, four receiver sets. You got tight ends who are playing like wide receivers and can go over the middle, can run a fade route, can run a full out. Who has the same receiving tree as a wide receiver? I think that's where the game has changed. And don't forget, you got running backs that you can line up on the outside. And a lot of them do that because that is the NFL game. You want to spread
the way the game has evolved.
You want to spread the field. So I don't think it's a devaluation, but it is something to think about as we progress in this offensive era of the NFL. Because defenses ain't taking over any time soon. Not yet. Maybe not ever.
Not again.
I don't think it's a devaluation. I just think the game has changed so much that you have to have multiple top flight receivers or two, a good X and a Y, and make sure that your slot receiver is serviceable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then there's some teams that there's a few teams that have that right now. Okay, I mean, look at the Raiders. They got Devontae Adams now. Mm-hmm. They got Darren Waller as a tight end. I could never think of the guys.
Even Miami with Tyreek Hill and Mike Gesicki.
Right. That's what I'm saying. And so, yeah, like you're right. It's just the way the game has evolved, you know, into the pass happy offenses and the, you know, throw it for 5,000-6,000 yards a season, stuff like that. So, mm-hmm. I don't know. It sure is fun to watch. I know that.
It's very exciting to watch. It's very exciting to watch. I just think that this RJ is going to become a president one, maybe 3-4 years down the road. I see it happening. I don't, like I said, I don't think it will be a devaluation of the wide receiver position. I just think it's going to continue to evolve. And you've already had the argument of should a tight end get paid like a wide receiver? Because a lot of them are.
a lot of them are playing, throw
the names out there. Mark Andrews, Travis Kelce. There's so many names. Darren Waller, Mike Gesicki. There's so many. A couple of years ago, Logan Thomas in D.C. The game is evolving. The game has changed. And the more that tight ends and running backs get involved as pass-catching options, we're not going to have those burly running backs like Leonard Fournette and all that in the league no more. It's going to be small, skinny guys that can go out, line up on the X, and line up outside and stretch the field that way.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely right.
All right, so last story of the night. Did you get a chance to watch either UFC or the Canelo fight Saturday?
I did get a chance to watch the Canelo fight. I only caught, like, I think the last two or three fights for UFC. That was it.
You were able to see the Oliver, the main event?
Yes.
Okay. You gotta talk about it more than I can, because I didn't watch it. I actually fell asleep because Saturday was a little crazy for me.
Well, I mean, it goes back to what I've told Greg on, you know, recent episodes when he was talking UFC, that I don't really follow the UFC that much. But, you know, it was there. I was like, all right, I'll watch it. So I watched, you know, I caught the last two or three matches. That was it, or fights. And, I mean, the main event, it was good. It was all right. But this Oliveira dude is, man, like pound for pound, this dude is a beast. Like, because I forget who even fighted, or who even fought. I said fighted. But he was the underdog. He showed up for the weigh-in. He was half a pound of making weight. So they stripped him of his title. So basically, he was fighting this fight to be the number one contender. So, you know, but he got knocked down two or three times, and I thought he was done. But they let him up. Justin Gaethje. And Gaethje let him up three times, and boom, he got him down on the ground. Put him in a submission hold. I mean, basically put him to sleep like that, and it was over.
Okay, like I said, I didn't watch it. of course, my benevolent brother, he's the boxing fan, so, you know, when I woke up Sunday, like, did you catch any of the Canelo fight? I'm like, come on, man, you saw me sleep in the damn on the damn floor. No. I went straight to sleep.
All I know is Canelo lost. That's all I know. Did.
But it's only his second defeat. So that is that. So we have reached the portion of the show where we give out our coveted awards for the week. Lou, do you have any for this week?
I do not.
Okay.
I do not.
I don't really have any either. I take that back. I have my weekly Ben Simmons Ribbitch Award. Goes to Ben Simmons because do you see the tweet after he had his surgery? I'm all in getting better soon. Shut the fuck up.
Well, I mean, like, we talked all that shit on him and everything, but maybe his back was messed up then. He only had surgery, so. Right. So let's just end it here. And I'll just say, I hope the surgery went well, and I hope he comes back, and I hope he plays good. Put it that way. I really do.
I just hope he decides he don't want to play no more and retires and goes off shoulder and go run right. Kangaroos. Anyway.
Okay. That's it.
All right. So, another great episode. Great to talk sports for another week. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Greg, we hope you feel better.
Feel better, Greg.
We hope you feel better, brother.
And with that,
go ahead. Pam and Cashley, I just wanted to say happy belated Mother's Day. Cashley, I don't know if you have any children or not, but
Cashley's not a mom yet.
Okay,
but I will say thank you on her behalf.
Well, she has a pet, then she is a mother. If she has a pet, then she is a mother. So we'll honor that too. So, you have been listening to another episode of the Best Man Sports Show on Stereo. This is the Young Black and Father Sports Desk. We will see you. Same back time, same back channel next week. Hopefully the full cast and Greg is feeling better and over his visit from maybe COVID, leaving her panties on his doorknob. And with that, we'll see you next week.
All right. Peace out, y'all.
Hey, do you have the Wi-Fi password? Common words everyone has said in an airport, coffee shop, or any public place with free internet. Don't fall victim to internet hackers while using free internet thanks to NordVPN. NordVPN is one of those services you tell yourself you don't need until it's too late. We've used the NordVPN to browse the web, check bank accounts, and even stream apps like Netflix. It's the only VPN service that lets you bypass ISPs, perfect for when your job has sites you frequent like Facebook is blocked. It's the best VPN service you can get for both price and performance. Install NordVPN on up to 6 devices, including your smartphone, tablet, and desktop, and experience the service for yourself. Start protecting yourself and your content with NordVPN by heading over to nordvpn.com/YBAB at checkout and save 75% on your subscription.